Good morning. We are joined on the phone by Dr. Preeti Malani. She is the Chief Health Officer and a Professor of Medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Michigan. As Chief Health Officer, Dr. Malani serves as an advisor to the President on matters of health and wellness of the university community, including disease management, public health preparedness, and promotion of healthy practices and climate on all three campuses. Welcome to the program, Dr. Malani.
Thank you for having me.
We have been hearing lately about antibody testing to find out whether a person has had COVID-19. How reliable are the results from these tests?
Thanks for that question. And the response that I'll give you today might be very different in a week or two, because this is the whole field is changing very quickly and rapidly, which is good. But antibody tests basically look at the idea of whether your body has been exposed to an infection, and in this case, COVID-19, infection, and has produced a response or antibodies to that particular infection. Sometimes these are also called serology tests. And in terms of whether they work or not, it's not clear right now. The market is flooded with a lot of different kinds of tests that haven't been really looked at carefully to make sure that they perform as well as possible. The good news is this is changing, and it's likely we'll have a few different tests that do show whether or not you have had prior infection. At this moment, I'm hearing just from friends and family about people getting tested or that they had the option to get tested. It's not clear that those results are 100% reliable.
Dr. Malani, in Pitkin County, they're claiming 100% reliability only because they tested people when they actually had the virus with a positive test, and then they came after and tested for the antibody test, and it did give them 100% results. But from my understanding, if you just get tested for the antibody test, then the test could get confused with other COVID viruses, other coronaviruses, as it were. Is that true?
The serology test should be specific to the SARS coronavirus 2. But, you know, what you're saying is that they were doing tests on people who recently had infection. The antibodies often aren't present for a few weeks. So it would be important also to make sure you test people that have negative infection, so maybe with some stored results from even a year or two ago when you know for sure someone didn't have infection. But again, there are different brands of this. There are different companies making this. And we need more information to make sure that the results are going to be consistent.
I'm curious, being someone who's dealt with a lot of people in public and constantly in an international resort community, and you hear of that people, when kids are raised in a bubble, they're more susceptible to diseases. But if you essentially roll your kid in dirt when your child is born, that they're more likely to build these immunities, these broader immunities. Are people that have been in contact with an international community, lots of kids, lots of sick people over the years, do they have a better chance of fighting off this infection?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, we think about this with kids in daycares who get exposed to a lot of different infections, and then maybe when they start school, they don't have quite as many. Unfortunately for this infection, because it is novel, right, the name is novel coronavirus, those previous infections don't really offer any benefit. Now, that might be different for some other types of infection, but it tends to be kind of short-lived. But for novel coronavirus, it doesn't really matter how much dirt you rolled around in and how much exposure you've had.
Dr. Malani, as the antibody tests hopefully become more reliable, how can that help us understand what's happening in the pandemic?
So it's a good question, and I think there are a few things that we can understand. By understanding who has been exposed to the virus and has had infection, it gives us an idea of what portion of the population has had infection. And we're learning more and more every day about people with really minimal infection symptoms or even no symptoms that they can recall. And we're hearing about it in young people and in older people. So there's one element of the benefit of these is what we call like a sero survey. And if we sampled everybody in your region of Colorado to just get a sense of like what portion of the population had been exposed, because What we see in terms of testing is limited. We see sort of the tip of the iceberg. We tend to see the sickest people who have come into the emergency department or hospitals or have had to seek care. The other piece of this on an individual level would be if we know that it does correlate to very highly with previous infection and that a negative test means you haven't had infection, then that would be helpful for people to just understand if they've had infection or not. I will say one thing we don't understand fully is what it means to have had infection. Does that mean you have immunity or not? And it's unfortunately unknown right now. There are a number of suggestions of that it does decrease, if not eliminate, your chance of getting reinfected, but that hasn't been proven yet.
Can you speculate whether or not a previous infection with COVID-19 would provide you any level of immunity to reinfection?
Yeah, so I'm going to speculate that it does offer protection. And so far, and again, I think we're going to have more information on this. There have been a couple things that have been interesting. There was a study, this was posted on a preprint server, but it was a study I saw about a month ago where they did a challenge study in a type of non-human primate, a type of monkey, where it looked like infection before meant they didn't get infected the second time. Now, it was a really small study. It wasn't with people. It was with monkeys, but that is helpful. We also know from the previous novel coronaviruses, including SARS, that there was suggestion that the immunity did last for several months and even up to a couple years. So I'm going to be hopeful because if we don't have some immunity, this is really going to be difficult to manage. There's some people who feel otherwise. And there's been some discussion around people getting, quote, reinfected with virus. And so far, a lot of that looks like it's kind of dead virus or a little bit of limited virus that's hanging around in people with no symptoms, but it's just a sort of artifact, if you will, of the test where people stay positive for a long time, but it doesn't mean that they're infectious or that they still have infection or a second infection. But again, if we have the same conversation in a few weeks or a few months, I think we'll have a much better sense, but I'm going to be very hopeful.
You're listening to KFFR. We're talking to Dr. Preedeep Malani, Chief Health Officer and a professor of medicine at the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Michigan. I want to ask you about the curve. We hear a lot about flattening the curve, and it seems like there has been some success in flattening the curve over these months. And I'm just curious if people continue to practice social distancing and working on this, is there a chance that less people would become infected, or is the curve just a longer drag and everybody that's going to get it is still going to get it?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a good question. And the notion of flattening the curve is that idea of trying to spread out infection and decrease the overall number, particularly to try to protect people who are most vulnerable. In this case, we worry about older adults and people with other health condition. But if you can avoid that surge, it also protects the health systems. So that is one reason that people could have a really poor outcome. And we've all heard about that. And across the country, people have taken extraordinary efforts to sort of stay home and stay safe if they don't need to be out. But the overall numbers, if you truly flatten the curve, the overall numbers can be less, in part because we figure out how to prevent things. You know, in theory, over time, you might have similar numbers, but if hopefully you can figure out A, how to treat things, B, how to prevent transmission, and then in this case, having a vaccine, hopefully. So flattening the curve is not just spreading out the infections. It does decrease infections overall, and it certainly decreases those surges that are very hard to manage for health systems.
Doctor, can you talk about, we hear a lot about herd immunity, and is that something we can put some hope in? Do you have hope in herd immunity? Should we all just go outside and sneeze on each other?
Yeah, well, no, I would not recommend that we shouldn't all just go outside. I think that a few nations have experimented with this a little bit. And in the United States, in a sense, we're like 50 nations in some ways, and some states have taken different approaches, and they're taking different approaches to reopening. So it'll be interesting to kind of learn from that. But this idea of herd immunity is that if you get to the point where there are enough people exposed to an infection, that you're not going to have as much transmission. And again, it gets back to our earlier discussion around what does it mean in terms of are you really going to be resistant or immune to having a second infection? And again, we don't know, although I'm hopeful. So getting back to the issue of herd immunity, because of the transmissibility being really high, you need the herd immunity to also be quite high to really prevent infection. But it could be helpful in some scenarios where it's hard to spread people out. And, you know, things that come to mind are schools and college campuses or nursing homes or jails, other places where you really have people in close contact and you can't truly spread them out. So in those cases, herd immunity might be beneficial, but we're a long way from it being beneficial to our society as a whole. And, you know, if you had asked me a month or two ago, I might have been more hopeful about that. And a month or two from now, I might feel differently. But right now, I think it's a little bit of a good thing, but it's not the full answer the way it might be for some infections.
Dr. Malani, what do we know about reinfection and whether it is maybe more severe or less severe?
Well, Stacey, we don't fully understand whether reinfection can happen. And there have been a few case reports, particularly out of Korea and Japan, suggesting that people have had a second infection. My own take on those is that, and from reading some of the literature around it, is that some of those were probably people that had a negative test in between and then had symptoms, and the symptoms could be due to something else, but got retested, and sure enough, you know, they had a positive test. And it's still unknown whether these are truly reinfections. If they are, then it's going to be a big problem for us in terms of immunity, and then we'll be in a difficult situation. But again, there are some suggestions that getting infected once means you have a less chance, if not prevention, of infection. And it's unknown whether reinfection would be more severe, but there wouldn't be any reason to believe that it should be. And if anything, perhaps the opposite, which is that infection should be less severe. But one of many things that is not fully known at this time.
There's no way to tell what's coming, but are there other pandemics that you're afraid of in the future? It seems like, you know, like Ebola, for example, there have been some medical breakthroughs on preventing or a vaccine for that. This one came out of the blue and is very, very virulent disease. Are you afraid that after this one gets handled that there's something new coming out?
Yeah, so this is something that we are afraid of, that you know, once we, and I hope we get through this as soon as possible. It won't be soon enough, but hopefully we can get through this, prevent spread, get to a vaccine, and be on the other side of this eventually, is that the danger will continue, and it has to do with the number of people we have in the world, the proximity of humans and animals, and just how we live, that it is likely that we could see another pandemic within a few years or within many years. So it really gets at the importance of paying attention to what's happening all over the world, monitoring these things. You mentioned Ebola, and Ebola is a really different scenario than this. And from what we know, there's not this sort of mild disease. It is very, very highly contagious, and it's very, very lethal. But it's also was containable in the sense that the places that were the hotbeds, which is mostly in West Africa, initially, they were able to have a very strong containment strategy, and there continue to be little outbreaks of Ebola. But Ebola is very scary. It's very different than what we're seeing with COVID. But that idea that something so deadly and hard to stop could spread is something that all of us need to have awareness of and to really take precautions at every level.
It's very interesting to see when you look at the broader world picture that the World Health Organization is one of those groups that's really on the ground dealing with Ebola and probably this virus in other countries as well. How important is the World Health Organization? Do you think it's funded properly or getting the attention and resources that they need?
Well, from my standpoint, the World Health Organization as an infectious disease doctor is one of the most important aspects of prevention. They are truly the boots on the ground, not just for pandemics, but for really health more broadly. In general, public health and health in general are not well funded. even in a country like ours, which is, you know, has really good resources. So, you know, one of the hopefully lasting effects of this tragedy will be, you know, to strengthen some of those groups, including the World Health Organization, as well as the CDC and local public health departments, and really providing not just people, but technology, is an important aspect of this, to really monitor what's happening and having reporting systems. So, you know, from my standpoint, I think the World Health Organization is a really important partner, and so adequate funding is essential for all of us.
Dr. Milani, thank you so much for talking with us this morning. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just be safe, and hope all of us will be on the other side of this soon.
All right. Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Dr. Preeti Milani. She is the Chief Health Officer and a Professor of Medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Michigan.